shooting out sparks over 38 states, the Canadian plains, and the tequila fields of Mexico.
A program most deserving of a grand introduction.
The Nocturnal Journal.
The Talk of the Town. WGN Radio 720.
With your guide, Dave Hoekstra.
Daytime turns me off and I don't mean maybe. 9 to 5 ain't taking me where I'm bound.
Welcome to the Saturday night's edition of the Nocturnal Journal. WGN, and we've got a great show for you planned tonight. We had protest music booked a couple weeks ago, so in the 10 o'clock hour, we are going to be talking about protest music. We got going to talk about the Blizzard of 67, a play out in Berwyn, Illinois. And we're going to begin with our friend Edward McClelland, the author of How to Speak Midwestern on Belt Publishing, a fine book. You know, Ed, we're always about a coat of many colors, no matter the time of the season here at the show. But this is just a fun book.
Thanks.
Just about Midwest dialect.
Yeah.
Pick it up from there. I mean, how'd you get the idea for this?
I've written – well, I guess it goes back to when I was in college because, as I say in the book, accents are an important part of regional identity and an important part – of Midwestern identity is believing you don't have an accent. And so I was at the University of Michigan, and I didn't think Michiganders had an accent. I was taking a linguistics class, and I asked a student from New Jersey, well, what do you hear Michiganders that makes our speech distinctive? And she said, well, you say things like can or sand. And that, as it turns out, is the raised A of the northern city's vowel shift, which you hear all the way from Rochester, New York, to Milwaukee. And so I'm down the line. I've written several books about the Midwest. I wrote a book, The Third Coast, about a 10,000-mile journey around the Great Lakes. And I wrote a book, Nothing But Blue Skies, about the Rust Belt. And as I did it, I picked up a lot of these Midwestern phrases. And actually, almost 20 years ago, wrote a regional glossary for the reader. So I guess it's something I've been working on for a long time. And I wrote an article about the Northern Cities vowel shift for our website. And it did really well. So we said, hey, let's do a whole book.
Now, you grew up in Lansing, Michigan.
Lansing.
Right? And you really didn't realize this whole thing until you got to University of Michigan, right?
Right.
So, I mean, what did your parents do? What was it like growing up around Lansing? Did everybody talk the same?
I had another friend from New Jersey who met me and a bunch of my friends from Lansing, and she said, yeah, everyone here in this room talks the same. So, you know, we do that thing, that raised A, and it's funny because the rest of the country does notice we have an accent. Of course, everybody knows the super fans, but 20 years ago, Saturday Night Live did another skit called 1-600 Lansing, and it was about a phone sex line for men who loved, as Christine Baranski was in it, and she said, "If it's, do you love sexy South Central Michigan accents?" And she's doing say that. Sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. This is the Nocturnal Journal.
That, you know, raised A, and you know, the raised A, and then it's called the fronted O, and that's when you'll say something like box, or that's really common. You know, that's another hallmark of what we call the Northern Cities vowel shift, which is in the Inland North dialect region, which is where we are. And you know, Chicago speaks more like Rochester and Buffalo than it does like Peoria or Decatur because of these, you know, the patterns of settlement. These people that get on the boat in Buffalo and go to the end of the Great Lakes. So, you know, they're sort of these horizontal bands of dialect regions in the Midwest.
Now, we've only talked to each other for about 5 minutes here,
yeah,
or so, but do you think what kind of accent do you think I have?
Oh, you got a Midwestern accent.
How can you tell that?
I can hear the A's and the O's.
Really?
Sure.
Really?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Now, Dan Long, our producer, he's from the South Suburbs. Do you break it down even in the suburban? Do South Suburban guys talk different than
Well, you know, I think the South Side guys talk differently because, you know, sort of this fall I went to 100 and Western in search of the Chicago accent. I went to a tavern called Wrong's Tap and watched a Bears game. And these guys, they're doing the stereotype of the Chicago accent, you know, with plus the F word and the N word and the J word thrown in. And it's their score was 13-10. And somebody said, what are the squares for this quarter? 0 and 3. So, you know, on the South Side, you count 1, 2, 3.
What about different words? I was thinking about this driving in.
Yeah.
I was born in Berwyn, and then we got transferred, and then we were in Columbus, Ohio, until I was like in fifth grade, okay?
Yeah.
And then we came back. My parents bought a place in Naperville. Mm-hmm. And I remember going to school, and in Columbus, I'd never heard the word cuts. Uh-huh. I was standing in line. Somebody were talking about cuts. Are there different, besides language?
Well, somebody told me in Columbus they say budged for cutting in line.
Yeah, right. And I'd never heard cuts till we came to Chicago suburbs.
I heard cuts in Michigan.
You did hear cuts in
Michigan. Yeah.
Are there other different words and different?
Well, you know, you want to talk about particularly Chicago words?
Yeah.
Well, I think most gym shoes, that's one. Most people say sneakers or tennis shoes.
That's true.
Yeah. That's pretty unique to Chicago. Yeah. Dibs.
Dibs, of course.
Yeah. Frunch room. I'm not sure how many people use that other than ironically now. Maybe older people still say it, but where you keep all your nice furniture. Let's see. I think if you say we're going to play 16-inch, most people around the country aren't going to know what that means outside Chicago.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Clout definitely has a different word,
yeah,
a different meaning in Chicago. There, I think generally people just think of it as influence, but here it's specifically influence used to evade rules that must be followed by the less well-connected.
You know, I'm working on a little book. We're driving around the country in a camper van, and we went to see a Steinbeck's camper van in Salinas. And
For Travels with Charlie.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And just my mind's been there for the last couple of weeks. And even in 1960, when he did Travels with Charlie, he talked about the loss. He was upset about the loss of dialect across America.
Yeah.
So how much has that changed even since 1960?
Well, I think it's, you know, after I went to that tavern, I got on the train to go back downtown, and I met a young man, I think he was in his 30s, and I kind of told him what I was working on, and he said he was a firefighter from Mount Greenwood. And if you're a firefighter from Mount Greenwood, you can have all the Chicago accent you want.
Mm-hmm.
People kind of expect it. But he didn't sound like a Midwesterner at all. And he said, yeah, my dad has a Chicago accent, but my mom kind of beat it out of me. And he says, it'll come out when I'm drunk. You know, my consonants will get harder. But, I think it's unfortunate, but I think having any kind of strong regional accent is maybe seen as some kind of a handicap in the professional world. You know, I say in the book that, you know, in the 60s, if you got out of college, high school, you could just walk across the street and get a job at a steel mill, and you didn't have to leave your neighborhood or talk to anyone outside your shop or your parish. And maybe having an accent made you sound like a regular guy and helped you in the, you know, camaraderie needed in industry. But after these mills shut down, people had to go to college, and maybe they had to get a job outside the area or move outside the region, and they learned to modify their accents to sort of move up in the white-collar world. And definitely when you talk about these regional accents, number one, you're talking mainly about the white population, because especially in the Midwest more than anywhere, there's what you call accent segregation. The widest differences between black and white accents. Because when African Americans moved up here, you know, they were isolated to the black belt, and they had no social or professional contact with whites, and so they maintain their southern accents. You know, they'll still say y'all. And now it's even a specific occupations of whites. You know, people who have jobs that don't require a lot of contact with people outside the region and have deep roots here. So, you know, police officers, firefighters, factory workers, you know, there's maybe four guys on the city council who have what you call the classic Chicago accent. Two of them used to be firefighters.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was also interesting, well, actually in line with that, before I forget, you mentioned in the book, we all love Route 66 on this show. So even like the advent of the highway system, the interstate system, that kind of broke this down a little bit too.
Yeah, well, what it particularly did that was interesting was change the accent in St. Louis.
Yeah.
Because St. Louis used to be, you know, what you call a Midland city, and the signature Midland word is wash for you wash your clothes.
Yeah.
Or the capital of the U.S. is Washington, D.C. Yeah. And there's an older gentleman there named Mike Shannon. He used to play for the Cardinals.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's on the radio.
Yeah, he's on the radio, and he talks about how they're going to play the Washington Nationals.
Yeah.
But, you know, because of the influence of Route 66 and later 55, St. Louis started to pick up this this northern accent, this northern city's vowel shift. And I could never, until I wrote this book, I could never figure out why John Goodman, you know, is from St. Louis, but he just sounded like such a northern Illinois working stiff on Roseanne. You know, his wife was Roseanne, and his sister-in-law was Jackie. And this is why.
You say here the most stereotypical St. Louis pronunciation is farty for farty. 40.
Yeah.
St. Louis swap R for or so they can eat carn on the cob and wish each other good morning.
Yeah, I was in the Carondelet Diner in St. Louis, and the waitress was like, "Good morning. What are you going to have?"
Boy, you must really, you know, I kind of do the same thing, but I don't pay attention like you do.
Yeah,
how do you
well,
pick?
Probably,
how do you? What do you? How do you do this? How do you pick up on that?
Probably since I started writing this book, you know, my ear has become more attuned to these accents.
Uh huh. I mean, so you also talk about research. You actually went to like regional bars, even in Chicago, McGee's.
Chicago
McGee's, you got the Ohio State accent.
Right.
Sluggers. I didn't even know Sluggers had an Indiana accent.
Oh yeah.
I guess Indiana people have to go somewhere.
That's the Indiana bar.
Yeah.
Went to Durkin's, which is the Pittsburgh bar, and I went to a St. Louis bar, and there's the one little, I think it was something Little Fort, is the Iowa bar. So that's where it was Euchre night, which is Soman Western, and there was a guy wearing a t-shirt with Bob Euchre's face on it. It took me a couple minutes to make the connection.
It's How to Speak Midwestern. It's on Belt Publishing. You say it's doing very well for you.
It's doing, you know, I wrote these serious books about Barack Obama and the Rust Belt, and they just had mass sales, and this is selling better than all of them put together.
Now, you got a nice review. I clipped it. See, I even clipped it. I'm from the New York Times.
Yeah.
But even, you know, and I've dealt with some New York. I mean, you know how people think about the Midwest.
It's from Chicago.
But the beginning of it says, learning to speak Midwestern. I know it's tongue-in-cheek, but can there be any more urgent national
tech? Yeah, well, the woman who wrote it went to New Trier.
Yeah, did she really?
Yeah. And it was, I think one of the reasons it's been getting attention is because of, you know, the Midwest swung the election and the presidential. So it's sort of been adopted as this anthropological text by coastal and foreign reporters. I did interviews with the BBC and the Times of London. The guy from the Times of London wanted me to teach him how to speak Midwestern.
Well, that's it. I mean, that's a good question. How do people perceive us from the – I mean, again, some of my experience is that everybody looks at this as flyover territory.
Sure.
It's not that important.
Chicago is more fly-through territory.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But when you do these things from – especially from a global point of view, how do they perceive us here?
Well, I think that there is an awareness more than we think. I mean, there's certainly – people are aware of the Fargo accent, and people are aware of the, the Chicago accent because of the Superfan skit, and people might be aware of the Pittsburgh accent. So I think more outsiders are aware of our accent than we like to imagine.
We're going to take a break, but you mentioned Pittsburgh. I have in my notes, Kennywood's open.
Oh, Kennywood's
What's
open.
What's that?
Your fly's unzipped. That's my favorite word in the whole book.
We're going to take a break. You want to do a little bit of a reading when we come back?
Sure.
Okay, we're going to take a break for some spots, and we'll be back on WGN with Edward McLellan, author of How to Speak Midwestern.
Hey, everybody, wherever you are, there's a new way of talking, and it's going to go far. You take the letters and the words, turn them all around, you say the last ones first, and you check out the sound, talk backwards. I know what you're thinking. That sounds strange. Talk forward so long that it's hard to change. But it's just like metric once you get the
Welcome drift. Back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN 720. That's our late pal, Stevie Goodman. Talk backwards.
He's interesting because there's sort of been a generational change in the pronunciation of our city's name. If you listen to a Dying Copan's Lament, he sings, "Do they still sing the blues in Chicago?" And now you're more likely to hear Chicago. So, old man Daly said Chicago.
Yeah, he did. It's great. I just can't believe you have that ear for it. I mean, Garrison Keillor. I mean, there's a Midwest accent.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And some of the skits he has on there for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, I'm pretty impressed. But you're going to do a reading for the book.
I'm going to do some tips on how to speak Midwestern.
Okay.
Talk through your nose. Midwestern speech, particularly inland north and north central accents, emanates from the top half of the head. Words originate in the upper palate and are directed out the frontal sinus, resulting in a semi-congested vibrato that's been said to sound like a pirate with a head cold. Hoke Colburn, the Georgia chauffeur in Driving Miss Daisy, described a woman from Ohio who talks funny like her nose is stuffed up. Try talking as though your lower jaw has fallen off and you have to form words through the rest of your face, and you'll be on your way to achieving Midwestern nasality. If you must criticize, do so passive-aggressively. It's been said that in New York, every insult is a compliment. This is my buddy Jerry. He's been busting my balls for 30 years now, right, Jer? In the South, on the other hand, every compliment is an insult. Well, aren't you kind? In the Midwest, you're never certain whether you're being complimented or insulted. Midwesterners don't like to sound critical or hurt anyone's feelings, so we've developed code words that allow us to avoid stating an opinion altogether. The most important words to know are interesting and different. If something has merit but you don't personally care for it, it's interesting. And I'll give you a real-life example that came up during the confirmation hearings for Betsy DeVos from Michigan for education secretary. Senator Bernie Sanders asked what she thought of his idea for free college education. She said, "That's a really interesting idea," which that's DOA.
Right. You know, we're having a lot of fun with this, and it's just I enjoy the book so much. But again, with being in the moment and having our show in this time and tonight, I mean, how important? I mean, that's just the beauty of America is the regionalism, the differences we all have.
Sure.
How important is that to understand all that?
Well, I wanted to write this. One reason I wanted to write this book and one reason I write about the Midwest is I want to show people that we're not just, as you said, the flyover or, you know, the bland middle or the linguistic standard, that we have speech that's just as colorful and sayings that are just as colorful as anywhere else in the country. So, you know, I think it's a way to celebrate our regional differences in a positive way.
Right, right. Now, I don't want you to go away without explaining.
Okay.
And I didn't know any of this until I read the book. North, Central, Midland, and Inland North.
All right, we're in the Inland North dialect region.
Did you make this up or did you learn this?
No, these are all linguistic phrases. I did not make any of this up. And it goes from Rochester, New York. You know, in Rochester, all of a sudden you're on the New York State Thruway, and all of a sudden people say, you know, oh, yeah, you get off at the Rochester stop. You know, so they're doing that fronted O, and it goes all the way to Milwaukee. And this is a legacy of settlement from Western New England. So Western New England produced the building blocks of the Inland North accent. And then there were immigrant additions, the D for TH, the D's, Dem, and Do's, which you'll hear a lot in the Inland North region. You know, English is one of the few languages with the TH sound, the these, them, that, those, and it's a major player. But immigrants weren't used to it. They couldn't do what they call the interdental fricative, putting your tongue through your teeth. They would just stop at the back of their teeth and say duh and them and those. And
what is that called?
The interdental fricative. Saying the, putting your tongue through your teeth. And it got passed down through the generations. And it's really kind of fading away, especially in the younger generation, because some people say the super fans drew so much attention to it, people became self-conscious and stopped doing it.
Yeah.
So then you've got the North Central accent, and that's in northern Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota. That's, you know, what was parodied in Fargo.
Sure.
And I don't know if you ever saw that Budweiser Ya Hey Dare takeoff in Wisconsin. And if you watch the Making a Murderer, I thought that was just so fascinating because actually the line between the Inland North and North Central goes right through Manitowoc County. And so all the establishment people were speaking in these urban Inland North accent. But, you know, you had the Avery family, and they were pure North Country. So, you know, the accent sort of magnified the issue of class that was part of that whole documentary. Then there's a Midland accent, and that's in sort of goes from Pittsburgh west through central Ohio and Illinois and Indiana into Iowa, and that's a legacy of Scotch-Irish settlement that started in Pittsburgh and Baltimore and went west. And there are still Scots-Irish words that are used there, like jag for thorn or run for a creek, and then this is where you have warsh, and that comes from in eastern Pennsylvania. People say water is water, and so that there's that O sound, and then it takes an O, an R after it.
So, what's your next book? I mean, are you going to do How to Speak Southern and How to Speak California?
I would certainly be open to writing a book about the entire country. I'm finding that this is just a fascinating window into issues like race and class and, you know, regionalism and all sorts of sociological questions.
But you, I think I read here on your next book, you want to write about Detroit during the War of 1812.
Well, that's one of my ideas. Yeah. You know, I have an idea for a book about Midwestern legends and folklore that could be a good follow-up to this one, too.
So what's the core thing that draws you to Midwest topics?
Well, I mean, I'm from the Midwest. Yeah. You know, I'm thinking about Detroit and the War of 1812. I mean, I'm from Michigan. That's the only war that ever came there, so it kind of fascinates me from that perspective.
Now, people can come see you.
Sure.
At the thing I'm holding here is the Cliff Dwellers, February 14th, 6 o'clock social hour, 7 o'clock program. The Cliff Dwellers, 200 South Michigan, 22nd floor.
Palos Heights Public Library on the 15th.
And what's your presentation like?
Well, I do a lot of clips. I play classic Chicago accents. I play the Eagle Insurance ad. I have
really.
you look at those low rates. I have some classic Chicago speakers, such as Alderman Nick Spezzato.
Yeah, that's great.
Do you know him?
No, I know the voice though.
Yeah, and then some younger speakers whose accents are not so strong. And then I sort of illustrate some well-known Chicago sayings such as dibs and gangway and then Trixie. We didn't even bring up Trixie.
No. Okay, well, thank you, Edward McClellan. How to speak Midwestern dare? It's on. What accent was that? I was trying to do.
Well, that
really
be,
wasn't.
That's an older version of the Chicago.
Chicago, an old thing. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I wasn't around for that. Anyway, it's on Belt Publishing, beltmag.com.
Yes.
Thanks for coming in tonight.
Thank you for having me.
And stay in touch.
All right.
We'll be back after more with David Jennings in the news on Nocturnal Journal.